One that read and everybody listen. At this time, I'd like to introduce Leah H. from D.C., Rock Creek area.
Hi, I'm an addict. My name's Leah. It feels really good to be here again. I've actually been to all of the CMP conventions. I'm probably one of about six of us who've managed to never miss it. I make it a priority. It's like on the calendar, and everything has to get scheduled around it. It was a big turning point in my early recovery. I went to my first convention in January of 1987 in Virginia, and this was in the very next month, and it was the first CMP convention. And when I went to that Virginia convention, it was the first time I ever felt like being a member of Narcotics Anonymous and living this way of life was viable for the rest of my life, just for today. Because up until that point, it was still every day was like I was had just as good a chance of going out as I did in. And that's when I was able to really make my commitment to Narcotics Anonymous. And, I joke because every year they call me and ask me to speak, and I don't know if it's because I always show up, so they don't have to worry about me, missing it, but I tell them, like, don't you have anybody else's phone number? Because there's always something, but, I'm happy to do it because Narcotics Anonymous saved my life, and it made me the person that I am today, which is a very different person than when I started, than when I got here, I grew up in a family that had my mother is very much she's very much like me. And it's funny because I left home when I was fairly young. I was 15, and so you wonder how much of that is there. And of course, I was using when I got left home, and I actually left. She lives on the West Coast, and she sent me to the East Coast to live with my dad. And I've really never spent too much time with her since, though we have a pretty good relationship now. And especially now that she's getting older, and I make time for her and go out there and go on a trip with her and do stuff. But for many, many years, both using, from the time when I was 15 and left her house to the time, I got clean when I was 26. And really until I was probably 40 years old, we had contact every 2 or 3 months by a phone call. And I would see her about every 5 years. And it's taken a lot to sort of work that and to work on getting there. So as a result, I knew how she was, but I didn't realize just how much I was just like her. But she was raised fairly religious, and she's always been sort of tell-it-like-it-is kind of person, and she's not very touchy-feely, and, she's very good with business and taking care of things and paying attention and being fairly organized and all these things. And, you think that how much of that do you take up? I started using. I was 12 years old. I left home at 15, and since I've started spending time with her, I realized just how much like her I am, and especially my husband will be like, now I know where she got that. Now I know where she got that when we spend time together. But, it's something that I'm grateful for today that it was sort of always sort of sitting inside of me dormant because when I was using, it really wasn't something that, I cared about. Integrity was just, how can I get some money? How can I get some drugs? How can I get high? And what do I have to do to get it? And, there was really no integrity in my life whatsoever. And, I did whatever I needed to do, whether it was walking a street corner, lying to somebody, stealing. It didn't really matter what I did. I just need to get money, I need to get drugs, I need to find some way to get them in me. And that was pretty much, what life was for quite a few years. And, it wasn't until I got clean that I started developing some morals and some beliefs on what's the right thing. And, and it took me a long time. There are a lot of different struggles you go through. When I was using, I had kids, and I had them taken away from me because I was using, and I couldn't stop using, and I wasn't ready to stop using. And I had them taken away from me by the state and put up for adoption. And, and I called my mother up, and I wanted her to take the kids, and she said no. She said, I still have two boys at home, and I just can't take two kids, two babies at this time. And, and that really hurt a lot. Until I looked at it from her perspective, years later, you know, that, you know, she didn't know what she was getting into, and she just wasn't willing to take it on, and she said that, you know. She didn't like, take him, have a resentment or, you know, any of that other stuff. She's like, no, I can't do it, even though she wanted, you know, she loved my, when I had the first baby, you know, when I was trying to hold it together a little bit, and she just like, I can't do it, and she was willing to accept her limitations and say, you know, say what she meant, and, you know, and that really hurt a lot, and it was easy, something to have a resentment about. And then I got clean, and I believe there were some things where I could have probably gone after the kids at that point and maybe gotten them back. But when I was using, I worked in a strip joint, and, you know, I made good money, but I spent every dime I made and any other money I could get a hold of using, and couldn't pay my bills or do anything. And then when I got clean, you know, I was still, my first year clean, I still worked in a strip joint. And, you know, I was waiting tables, dancing once in a while if I was in the mood, but not too often. And, you know, there was an opportunity to probably get the kids back. But, and I was going through this big struggle when I had, you know, 6-9 months clean about trying to get these kids back because of all the guilt I felt about having them removed and being a mess and not being able to get clean and all this kind of stuff, you know. And I had to really sit and work on it for a while on, you know, why am I doing this? What are my motives for doing this? If I was successful, then what would I do when I had these two children? Was I able to care for them? You know, and I had to ask myself a lot of questions, you know, because the easy thing is to do is to get a bug up your ass and to go at it and then not really think about the consequences of it, you know. And certainly looking back on it, and even at the time, I had to admit to myself that, yes, I was working and I was able to, you know, I had an apartment, I was able to pay rent and stuff like that, but there wasn't a lot of extra, and were two kids to come in my life, what would happen? Because there would be no way for me to pay for childcare, you know, or a decent enough place for us, all of us to live and still work and do all these kinds of things. And so, you know, and they were in a good home together, and they'd been there for, you know, 3 years at that point. So by getting the kids back, who was I doing that for? For the kids or for me? You know, and I really had to ask myself a lot of questions. And that's where a lot of the integrity, I think, has to come from, is from deep within. You know, what's the right thing? You know, and then doing it is sometimes the hard thing, because I've had to come to an understanding that, you know, and at the time it was like, well, you know, they're probably better off where they're at. I'm probably better off where they're at. And, you know, at some point, if I stay clean, I can make amends to them. I'm easily found. I'm in the D.C. area. I pay extra to keep my phone number listed, you know, so that it's pretty easy to find me. I know my ex-husband, from using the father, found me when I had about 10 years clean by calling information. So, you know, it would be pretty easy to find me if they ever wanted to. And at that time, you know, I could make the amends. That's what I did, is I made the decision that I would leave it alone and that I would stay easily found. I would work on myself so I could become the kind of person that they could be proud of should they ever come to me, and that I would be able to sit down with them and talk to them. And maybe it would never be all right, but it was just the way it was, you know, and that sometimes there's responsibility that I need to accept from my using, and there's a lot of wreckage and a lot of things that can't be undone through using. You know, I have some physical things that came about from using that aren't going to get better. You know, they got a little better clean, and they're going to stay that way. And there, you know, are a lot of things that we bring in here with us that we just have to learn to accept and understand and own and take that responsibility. You know, and I've been clean over 20 years now, and, you know, I'm still waiting, and my kids are in their mid-20s now, so, you know, any day now, I always wonder, am I going to get a call? And, in fact, a couple times I thought they're old enough now that it probably wouldn't, like, screw them completely up if they heard from me, but, you know, I give them a little more time, and then maybe at some point I can find them, because I know that I can. It wouldn't be that difficult to find them. You know, so anyway, I've got a lot of this moral fabric that was sort of instilled in me when I was young, when I didn't even know that it was coming in. And I just sort of threw it all away throughout my using. And then when I got clean through not using, and really having to, you know, look inside myself for who am I and what do I want to be and how do I want to present myself, I've sort of developed a moral fabric for myself. And it's not the same as everybody else's. I mean, you know, like I said, I worked in a strip club and I had a year clean. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think you can stay clean anywhere and pretty much doing anything. I recommend against illegal things because who wants to go to jail clean? I've known a lot of people who did it. But, I don't really think of things like that as immoral and that you have to do all these different things or dress a certain way, But for me, I know that I have a belief that I try and say what I mean and do what I say. And when I make a commitment, you can pretty much know that I'm going to do it. If I'm going to be somewhere or I'm going to do something, you can pretty much count on me to do that. I'm not one to sort of blow it off, decide that I don't really feel like taking phone calls and not call anybody back for days. You know, I won't necessarily call you back if you call and say, hey, just checking in, see you later. But, you know, if you call me and say, can you call me? Or I wanted to talk to you, I'm going to call you back because I think that that's the right thing to do. And, there's a lot of times, and it's funny because I'm pretty much a tell-it-like-it-is kind of person, and most people know that who know me, and a lot of times you really don't want to necessarily hear what I have to say. And, you know, I piss a lot of people off, and I don't really care. And people will be like, you know, so-and-so got upset, and I'm like, well, they'll get over it. Or they won't. Either way, that's okay because, you know, that's just the way I am. And as a result, but I have a lot of people who come to me in my life. And as much as I am sort of a cut and dried, nuts and bolts kind of girl who says it like it is, I wind up with a lot of people in my life, you know, the using hooker who calls me all the time, who wants to think she might want to get clean, but she's on all sorts of drugs. And I'm about, you know, I don't take anything for anything. You know, I don't have put me to sleep for, you know, yanking teeth out of my mouth. I just don't take things. You know, I'm not saying I never would if something really bad happened, but I've watched a lot of people in here. So I'm pretty much about, you know, we don't take pain medication. I know that when I was using, my body doesn't know the difference, so unless I absolutely have to, I don't. And I wouldn't do it alone, and I don't believe that I could self-regulate pain medication. So, you know, yet people who take all these drugs call me all the time. And I'm like, well, you know, your body doesn't know the difference. But I still take the calls, and I don't know why they call me. I sort of attract this sort of homeless hooker out there kind of crew, and they call me, and I still take the calls, and I always wonder, why do they call? But, you know, I always figure if you're an addict and you need some help, there are a lot of miracles in this room, and I'm one of them. And had you seen me when I walked into Narcotics Anonymous, you would never believe. I mean, I had open abscesses up and down my arms. You know, I was probably 100 pounds, and I was very, very angry. And, I mean, I'm not touchy-feely and warm and fuzzy today, but if you wanted to see somebody who had a lot of anger, you should have seen me 20 years ago. And yet, if they call, I'm willing to take the call because I don't know who's going to stay clean. And, and I don't know if just because somebody answers the phone, it keeps somebody coming back when they hit that bottom that was just enough. And I've been here long enough to know that I can't tell when somebody's going to stop using. I never forget this one guy who had been, when I first got clean, and at the time he had 60 days longer than I did, and he had been coming to meetings for almost 7 years, almost every single day, and had never gotten more than 3 days clean. And then one day he says, you know, I woke up and it was just like any other day. And I didn't use that day, just like I don't a lot of days, and then I always pick up. And the days just started blending together, you know. And he wound up with like 12 years clean and wound up using, forgetting that meetings were important and all that other kind of stuff. And he's back now and has been clean for a number of years, but I'll never forget that early on, you know, that he would be like, yeah, you know, I never really thought I was going to get clean. You know, 5 meetings, 6 meetings every week, and I never got more than 3 days. But then one day, and he didn't said it didn't feel like any other day to him. You know, he didn't know that that was the day he was getting clean and was going to, like, put some days together. So as a result, I try not to judge, even though some people I look at over and over and just wonder, are they ever going to get it, especially as their life keeps tumbling. But I always remember that their purpose may be to keep me here, you know, that the more I see of that, the more I know how important it is for me to be at my home group every week and to be of service and, you know, to do the same things. And, you know, and I know a lot of people who do get clean and stay clean for a while don't necessarily stay as involved. They sort of feel like, well, I've done my time and it's time for other people to sort of take over. But, you know, for me, I think that what worked in the beginning is what still works for me today and what keeps me on focus and keeps me on track to remember that I'm still an addict. I'm still the addict that I was that I walked in this room. It's only been arrested. So in order to continue that on, you know, and become and stay the person who I am today, who I really actually like, I need to keep doing the same things that got me here today, you know, which is first thing is I don't pick up. I always call that step zero. You know, you don't pick up. People need to work a first step. Well, you can't work any steps until you get past step zero, which is not picking up, you know. And you don't need a higher power. You don't need anything. You just don't pick up, no matter what. And I don't care if it's for 10 minutes, an hour, you know, and you just string it together as long as you can stand it. And eventually you can get to a first step. You know, so for me, I do a lot of what I did then, you know, which is I have a home group. I'm in service to my home group. I attend meetings regularly. I don't go every day, but I go to the same meetings every week. And, I mean, I have people who I'm seen in 3 years will say, I had to come up here tonight because I really wanted to talk to you about something. And, you know, they just know where I'm going to be because it's a non-negotiable item. You know, I still am involved in area service. And, you know, in one capacity or another, unfortunately, I took a position last year. But for many years, I mean, the best thing that I did was I stood at the literature table and counted the IPs to put in the bag, you know, because I like doing that. But I stayed there and I made myself available and of service, you know. I spent many years at the region and more than I like to think of doing world service. And it's a lot of time and it's a lot of aggravation. And but it taught me a lot of things. It taught me about... It helped me. I really identify a lot of sort of self-will and our will and, you know, and still, you know, allowed me to find my core beliefs because I think that one of the things that we're able to do here is once we put down the drugs, we start this journey to find out who we are, what we believe in, and how we want to live our lives and be perceived to the public, you know. And a lot of what I learned in here in Narcotics Anonymous is the same stuff that I take from here and I take it back out, you know. I've gotten involved in boards, you know, volunteered to be on boards outside of Narcotics Anonymous, and a lot of the way I learned how to sit in a committee meeting without throwing something when they're pissing me off is by sitting in subcommittee meetings within Narcotics Anonymous, you know. And it takes a long time to do that before you can take it out of here and know that you can keep it under control. And at least for someone who has as much the inherent ability to get fairly angry and fly off the handle like I do, you know, I was active in my local community association and putting on, you know, block parties or just, you know, things. And I couldn't have done any of that when I got clean. I couldn't even done it at 5 years clean. But it took me many, many years of doing service in Narcotics Anonymous to learn how to take it out in Narcotics Anonymous. And I hate to tell you, people talk about, oh, area service, nobody wants to do anything, nobody wants to volunteer, people don't want to show up. Well, guess what? It's just not Narcotics Anonymous. People are people, and we're just like the people in here are just like the people out of here, people in community places and volunteer organizations. Lots of people volunteer. They want things done. They don't want to do it themselves. They say they'll do something. They don't show up. They don't return phone calls. So, you know, the things that we do in here that seem so aggravating are just normal life things. But they're things that we're trying for the first time, and so it seems like things should be better, that everybody should do what they say and show up when they say they're going to. You know, I recently went on a vacation with my husband, and, you know, I'm sitting there with the calendar saying, okay, well, I need to be back for this because I said I would be, and area service is this day, so this is our window of opportunity to actually go out of town because I would never schedule a vacation through a service commitment, you know, because I said I'd be at the service commitment, so I need to make sure that I work my schedule around it. You know, and people think I'm crazy when I do that. Well, why are you going then? Why don't you go this week? Because I'll miss something, and I said I'd be there. And that's just sort of, you know, the kind of thing that I believe. If I say I'm going to do something, and I don't put things in an appointment book. And I'm self-employed, and I recently took on a partner, and she has to write everything down. You know, and then she forgets shit. And I don't write anything down, but I always am in my mind. It's sort of like, what am I doing this week? What am I doing this week? And I try not to overschedule myself, and I make sure that I do what I say that I'm going to do. You know, and I hate to actually admit it, but because I'm self-employed, I do have one phone call I have to make during this meeting. So I'm going to have to step out at 5:45 and catch somebody before close of business, because I told my client I would. But, you know, but that's just the kind of thing that's important to me, you know, and then I know that once I start compromising things or being willing to start blow one thing off, then it sort of snowballs, you know. And so it's not really like, how do you feel? Or, you know, I don't feel, or I'm really tired, so I'm not going to go to the meeting tonight. No, I have regular meetings, and if I was really tired and using, I'd be out looking for dope. So I guess if I'm really tired, I can go out and look for the meeting, you know. And that's just sort of the way I try and carry my life today, and it's been fairly effective. And I think that if you asked almost anybody who knew me, that they would tell you that that is all true, that, you know. And sometimes I'll surprise them, like they'll give me a question, like, you know, let's see what Leah would say about this, because I generally have an opinion on something, and if somebody asks me, I'm certainly willing to share it. And frequently when they don't ask me, so... So that's just, you know, that's the way I am, but that's what integrity means to me. It's sort of, you know, knowing what I believe in and trying to do the right thing and doing what I say when I'm going to do it. And also, it's just as important to sort of not compromise and, you know, I'm not the people pleaser where I say, yes, I'll do something and then get a resentment over or, you know, have a problem with it or blow it off because it's something, you know, it's like, no, I won't do that. And if it, you know, frequently, like, I've never been to a woman's meeting. I don't really like the idea of separating ourselves out. And so people will say, will you come lead this woman's meeting for me? I was like, actually not. You know, I've never been to a woman's meeting. I don't plan on starting on it now. I know they help a lot of people, but, you know, I don't know. It just for me, I just don't like the idea of separating little segments of our fellowship out there, you know. And as a result, you know, that's just what I do. I've been to a couple men's meetings, but that's it, you know. And, you know, I always sort of gravitated that way when I was using anyway. And coming in, and when I came in, the fellowship was like 7/8 men anyway. So, you know, if I didn't want to get any help from the men, let me tell you, there would have been no help to be found because there was only about 4 people out of 30 people in a group that were women, and none of them had any clean time. You know, it was a different fellowship. We continue to evolve and grow. I'm grateful to be here and be a part of it. It saved my life. I don't know where I would be today, but I suspect I wouldn't be walking the earth if I'd continued using, but I didn't have a lot of years left in me. I couldn't have continued on at the rate I was going. It was going downhill really fast, and I've been scraping the bottom. And I'm just so grateful that I called the phone line in Narcotics Anonymous, and an addict answered the call and got me to a meeting. And I got to say one thing, you know, that was just so incredible to me. He's still clean. I still see him at meetings on a regular basis. And, you know, he got me to go to a meeting. He gave me the desire to stop using. He worked on me every day on the phone. Call me every day. I'm going to think you're dead in an alley from an OD if you don't call me. Can you come to a meeting? Finally got me to go to a meeting. By going to meetings regularly high, I was able to get a desire to stop using. And I actually detoxed in the rooms here, and my abscesses cleared up. I detoxed. I felt like shit. I didn't really think that when I was detoxing that that was it. I didn't think this would be a way of life or that I'd learn how to live clean and be as content as I am today. And that convention in Virginia was a big turning point for me. And coming here the following month, and then I went to a lot of conventions in the beginning. I don't go to so many anymore, but always this one. And to me, it's just an incredible, credible thing that I was able to come here, get clean, and stay clean. And, you know, I know you hear a lot about relapse, and unfortunately it is part of many people's stories, but it doesn't have to be. So if you're here and you're new and you've never had to go out and, you know, relapse or do some more research, you can come in here, get clean, and stay clean. Thanks for letting me share.
Wish to thank Leah for her sharing her experience, strength, and hope. Our second speaker is Tony D. from D.C.
Good evening. My name is Tony, and I'm most definitely an addict. And thanks, Leah, for sharing. And really got a lot out of it. Kind of whispered over to her. I said, "You're real quick." And she said, "Yeah, I'm always real quick." So, I guess right to the point on the subject of integrity. You know, I really didn't have to give that a lot of thought, though I was the disease in me as an addict wanted to give it a lot of thought, because I've realized that one part of my disease that ruled my life for many years was intellectualism. And I could rationalize and justify the most outrageous things. And so today, with almost 9 years in the program, I'm always suspect of me in that area. And one of the things I realized about Narcotics Anonymous, what I have learned, is that the greatest story that can ever be told in Narcotics Anonymous is your own story, which comes from your heart. And I never forget when I struggled for many years wanting to be clean. I'm talking about hitting a bottom so hard where you just don't know when you're going to stop. And I can remember that like yesterday. And I can remember you all coming to a place where I had to get clean. That was called the penitentiary, through what's called the H&I Committee. And most of you are familiar with that if you spend any time in Narcotics Anonymous. And I can remember a member who I am still today, it's a part of my network, really, really great guy. And I can remember his words probably now 13 or 14 years ago. Because I was one of those addicts that was introduced into the program in 89 and didn't surrender until 98. So, and it was 9 programs in between. And I can remember him talking about recovery has to be in your heart. I remember that. And I can remember having that time where the Creator did more for me than I could ever do for myself by giving me life through the most difficult circumstance, which was called prison, and then having a shot at life, beginning to deal with the matters of my heart. So that registered immediately when he said that. It just registered. It just hit me that, wow, this was the journey that I was seeking, to get from my head to my heart. And I never forget, there used to be a Catholic priest that used to come to the penitentiary, and he gave me a book called The Journey from the Head to the Heart. And in the book, it talked about the long journey. So, you know, that's spiritual matters, because what happens is the Creator begins to give us things that we need. And I tend to believe that this higher power that we talk about in Narcotics Anonymous tends to know more about me than I know about myself. So there are things that I'm responsible for knowing. I think when I come into the principles of the Narcotics Anonymous program, then this power that's greater than myself begin to take over. All I am obligated to do is just stay on the path. And you know, you all have said it over and over again. You say, keep coming back, keep coming back, keep coming back, keep coming back. And somewhere along the way, the rebellion that kept me using subsided, and I kept coming back. I think in short order, integrity, in short order, to the point, is the program. And Leah kind of said it. She really hit it. It's really the program. But I believe the program deals with the matters of your heart. So when Leah says something, it just registered into what I already understand to be true from my experience, strength, and hope. And that is, you know, in the first step, when we admit that we're powerless, there's something powerful about that, long before surrenderance even come. So this young man that she was talking about, I can immediately identify with it because that was my story. I admitted in 89, but surrenderance didn't come until 98. But I believe my admitting powerlessness was significant because what was happening that was far beyond what I could comprehend was a call for help. It's really what it was. And it was a long journey from that moment when I realized I was out of control, that I no longer had integrity in my life. No accountability, no responsibility. You know, I couldn't show up consistently. And I love it. You know, I've heard it described inside of these rooms, and I take this description because, you know, that downward process, I've heard it described as a greased pole. And as much as you try to grab hold of something, when you're going to the bottom, you just keep sliding. And I can remember having a sponsor, because I've had many, because I would go in, I would come into the program, and I would leave out, I would come in, I would leave out. And I can remember one time, one of my sponsors who really took me on and was in integrity because he was in service. We'll talk a little bit about that. And he took me on as indicative of the program. He was in service. He was trying to help a newcomer. And he tried to help me with understanding and with clarity. And he said, Tony, I really feel for you. He said, because you appear to have trap doors to your bottom. He said, you find new ways to go down more and more. And he said, I'm real afraid for you. He said, because people do die as a result of disease of addiction. He said, and I really wouldn't want to come to your funeral. And of course I continued, you know, I still continue to use. But I realized that I was powerless and unmanageable. And so really what I am saying here is the internal process of integrity. I think that's spiritual. And as much as I could really kind of understand this, it's probably in the same order as I understand probably something that starts from a seed that ends up in a full-grown plant. I think that looks like something in the program when, and I can remember this story. You know, I'm a bit of an environmentalist. I love the environment. I can remember years ago when this activist stopped a group of developers from leveling this area of the rainforest. And what she did, she climbed this very high tree. This tree probably was maybe 80 feet. And she camped out in the tree. And that was a part of her protest to prevent the developers from tearing down the forest. And what was very interesting was in that story, not really so much her activism, but the story talked about this tree and how this tree was over 100 years old. And I was like, wow. And, you know, and I'm no expert of the forest or anything like that, but, you know, over the years I kind of learned that you can kind of determine the age of trees by looking at the rings on the inside and all these kinds of things. But what was amazing was that this very tall tree that was over 100 years old started out as a seed. And so what I'm really talking about is understanding just what Leah kind of talked about that gentleman coming in and going out, because that was my story, that you all were planting a seed of recovery. The messages that I heard into my heart that I had no idea how it would grow. And to know that when I come upon, you know, predecessors in the program of Narcotics Anonymous, like my sponsor who has over 25 years, and when I hear his story from where he started out to where he is, from a seed to a full-grown plant, talking about this integrity that starts internally, admitting that I'm powerless, coming to surrenderance, as a result of really thoroughly going through the first step, I begin to not try to run my own life, but all of a sudden I become open-minded. I begin to see the hope. The Creator begins to serve me what I need. And eventually I make my way to service. The kind of integrity that we see inside of the rooms. In other words, you know, and it kind of connects over to another understanding, and I really thank the Creator for just the program and the continuation of keep coming back and those things that are revealed in the program, because all of a sudden I begin to learn what the past tense of the steps mean. That means there were some people here in integrity long before I got here. So we admitted that we were powerless, and see, that was difficult for a complicated addict like me. Because I was too smart for the program. I came in talking about, oh, I can't really say that I admit it. I'm admitting now. I can never really relate to that process because I'm one of these addicts that will tinker with things at that level. But I just start admitting anyway. And over time, I begin to realize why that was the case. I mean, something as basic but yet profound as why the steps are in the past tense. Because the Creator had done something for me long before I got here. People were recovering. And so I met integrity coming into the door. And what happened in the recovery process, which is spiritual, you begin to plant integrity in an addict like me as a newcomer. So you waited on this guy. You know, I understand when the newcomer comes in that he may admit that he's powerless, but he keeps going out, keep coming back, keep going out, keep coming back because surrenderance hasn't kicked in. I can talk to a newcomer relative to the fact that you have opened up the reality of your life that you need help, how powerful that is. And to know as difficult as my process was, just to get to the second step, that I can equally understand maybe how difficult your process may be and how bewildered you may feel, how distraught you may feel trying to get from using to not using. I believe integrity is the process, like what we find in the steps when I do work on me, and it is the result of the process. That means I go from being this self-centered person when I came in here. And I heard Leah talk about that. I identified with that. You know, to this kind of growing into more and more the selfless person. And our program becomes very clear on that because in the literature, our program talks about being productive members of society. Our program talks about service. We talk about inside of the rooms unconditional love. These kinds of things, and I love it because the 11th step really kind of also talks about that by the time you get to the 11th step in prayer and meditation, how you really have a desire to heart changes. So, you know, this predecessor was so much on point because he said recovery has to be in your heart. And so the 11th step really talks about the change of the heart because I want to do more of God's will than my own. And so the process began to take place for an addict like me in a way that I could never, ever imagine, nor could I comprehend. Smart addict like me. Started out thinking that I could use safely. Started out really thinking that I had a handle on the whole process. And at the end, I was using against my own desires. And to now, you know, being right on the crest, you know, I'm kind of right on the, what I want to say, looking at this kind of this shore, like coming off of an ocean, looking at the shore, coming up on another year, 9 years is a miracle for an addict like me and the story that I know of myself. Couldn't I tell you how the plant grew? I could not even begin to suggest to you close to 9 years ago that a tree would emerge out of that process, if you kind of get what I'm talking about. So maybe that's why we are here and what is necessary for us to be here for the newcomer that comes through the door. Because the newcomer that comes through the door that does not have the faith needs to see the example until they get to the place where the evidence is made real. So what happened after a while of getting some hope in the second step, that internal integrity, that I'm talking about something that starts from the inside that you would never see, but the Creator understands. That's why we do step work. And getting to that place in the third step, when I was really willing to say that I'm going to do the rest of the program. When I begin to really, you know, and I think locality, you know, people move sometimes and they get recovery, you know, a lot of different ways. But, you know, the local area really worked for me. Because I could look around and I could see somebody that I knew that were in dire straits. Someone that I knew that was at death's door. Someone that I knew that should not have made it. And I look in the rooms and I see them recovering. It was a perfect setup for the third step of willingness to say that I want to do the rest of the program. What I'm talking about is, if you really look in the literature, you might not really find this word integrity so much. But you find all of these other words that are connected to integrity, like honesty, like open-mindedness, like willingness. And now, you know, having the evidence and being in the process for a while, I start getting the courage. That's the word that's attached to integrity. And the fourth step, to do my own personal moral inventory. You know, I don't think that I was ever really willing or courageous enough to, you know, because of the denial system, you know, and really being a person so driven by self-will, I never really imagined that I could really talk about the terrible liabilities that I had to get in touch with in the fourth step. Now, you know what's beautiful about the fourth step, because it does talk about the balance, your assets and your liabilities, and being able to really get that balance. But, you know, if you really read on into the fourth step and you kind of go into the fifth step, the beautiful thing about the program is that it's really focuses in on our weaknesses, really our liabilities. You know, and I kind of later began to realize that that was kind of a double-edged sword for an addict like me, and I'm going to tell you what I'm talking about. Because an addict like me, for so long, I came to really realize what the self-will was about, that really manifested itself in arrogance. It manifested itself in a kind of, for lack of a better word, like an overkill in my social interactions with people, where I had to kind of show people that I can measure up, or I'm just as important as you are. And I later found out after doing step work and being courageous that it dealt with some low self-esteem. And that low self-esteem was something that just didn't pop up in my life, but it was rooted long in my life, long before I used, all the way through my childhood. And after really kind of getting in touch with the source of the low self-esteem, and I'm talking about, not prolonging the subject to go into the details, but I want to get to the solution and not focus on the problem, but touching the problem to get into the reality of the problem, and then having really a sponsor to talk about this in the fifth step, where the solution was understanding that the resentments that I had around some of my childhood experiences, I did not no longer have to hold on to those resentments, that I could let people off the hook and myself too. But I'm talking about the integrity that is internal first. See, because I really can't get to maximum service until I get freed in full. I really can't have this manifestation of integrity that I know that exists in Narcotics Anonymous when I look at the predecessors who I admire, who I'm drawn to, that's kind of walking in this harmony and in this peace, and they have a balance, and they have the skills as a result of working the steps to be able to handle and cope with their life, and they have reduced the drama of their lives. Now, I'm talking about long after the using. I'm talking about the center of this thing that brought us in here, just called the disease. I'm talking about really being drawn to these kinds of predecessors and being on that same path, also having to follow the same process, that kind of internal integrity that has to happen before I get to some manifestation of service. That's the outer integrity. That's really the tree that's at the end of the process of the planting of the seeds. The seeds become the 12 steps of the Narcotics Anonymous program. And going into the fifth step, really the power of that step and the integrity that exists in that step is the, first of all, is just having someone that you can trust and get real with what you're dealing with and what you're working with, and then to have the relief for an addict like me to realize that I didn't have to be alone. You know, because, you know, isolation for an addict is a terrible thing. To be able to have, first of all, to admit to God, to be real with myself, and then to have a trusted human being that I could sit down and talk about those very dark moments, and to be really relieved in knowing that I really wasn't the only individual in the world that went through trauma, disappointments. Not the only person in the world that held on to deep resentments. And to know I didn't have to be isolated in those feelings. A tremendous relief. And again, going back to this subject and this issue of integrity, that process in the fifth step and just really having the will to go through that, begin to heal my life, the Creator begin to serve me in ways that I can never comprehend. Didn't really wanting to get better, I think. A deeper level of willingness in the sixth, of wanting to have God to remove my defects of character, the humility in the seventh step, to have God to deal with my shortcomings, is, I think it sets the stage for what I see in the program. When I see the integrity in Narcotics Anonymous, it's this lifelong commitment just to get better. Because I realize as long as I live, you know, this addict is going to have shortcomings. But the heart change that takes place from the fifth step, what I get in touch with in the sixth, the willingness, the deeper level of willingness that brings about the humility in the seventh step really prepares me for this lifelong journey of change. One of the things I realized, I think, that is very, very powerful with the integrity of humility in the seventh step is that one of the things that we find in humility is everything that has previously taken place in the first six steps. Because I know, you know, we can't find humility without honesty. I can't find humility without open-mindedness. I can't find humility without surrenderance. I can't find it without willingness. I can't find it without courage on the spiritual plane. And so this kind of momentum that takes place. The process that begins to change my life, and where does it change? It changes in my heart. The miracle becomes an internal process. And you know, I believe what happens is that if the Creator gives us an opportunity to tell the story, we tell it. But if we don't get the opportunity to tell it, it's still okay. Because once you begin to realize that there is an inside change that's coming about in your process, I believe what that does, it begins to settle you more and more in your process. And really what I'm talking about is, from my experience, strength, and hope, is that I'm just not moving as fast anymore as I used to. You know, I'm just not as eager, and I don't want to say necessarily excited. I'm excited about the program. I continue to be excited about the program. Narcotics Anonymous is a life-changing experience, but I'm talking about a kind of settling in to really know that what you have that's operating in your life certainly makes a change in all of your life, not in just some areas of your life, but in all of your life. Wow, the eighth step and the ninth step for me, probably one of the greatest challenges through my recovery process has been a challenge of staying in the process of dealing with my son. Now, probably one of the things that happened during my using, which is typical of any addict story, and that I spent a lot of years away from my son. And when the Creator saw it fit that I would find this thing called recovery, one of the greatest challenges was to go back into have a relationship with him. Needless to say, by the time I got back into my son's life, my son was, wow, probably 14 or 15. And so he was always respectful, but underneath he had pretty much formed a lot of his own opinions. Today my son is, he's 19. And he's in college. And I had the opportunity, thanks to the Narcotics Anonymous program, I've been in his life consistently. The program has benefited me in such a way of being able to meet life on life terms. I mean, just, you know, what you have to do. You know, we are productive members of society, so that means you get up, you go to work, you deal in the world, you operate in the world. You take your hits, you know, the old saying, you take your licking and keep on ticking and the whole nine yards. And to go through a process knowing that you have lost much, it's very difficult not to have expectations. But here's the real piece. As much as I have been, probably my expectations have not been met. And let me say that that's this addict. That's really a part of my disease thinking, because I'm always looking for something when I give something. My son has done more for me to mature me into the next process by being right where he is. And I'm talking about being able to interact with, I'll give you a perfect example. My son, I'm in the process of getting him a car. And he's in college, and I think maybe several weeks ago, went down, maybe about a month ago, to visit him. And you know how college students are, they're in need. And he goes to a fairly expensive college. Good kid, proud of him. His mother did a really great job. And just outfitted him, everything he needed. Now, mind you, this is just one incident, one activity, one interaction with him from the time he was maybe 14 or 15 when I came back in his life, that's been consistent. I don't know if he's been programmed a certain way, but his interaction with Daddy is, hey, if I can't get anything out of you, I really don't want to have a whole lot to do with you. So we've had this kind of tug of war back and forth for where I've been trying to really pull him into a process of kind of trying to be unconditional. Of course, again, my expectations on him is that you probably shouldn't interact with your parents or your father in such a way where it's just about me. You know, why don't you call sometimes and just say hi? You know, and you don't have to always call and say, what do you have? Or can I get this? So, you know, what's amazing is we have grown in that area, though. We really have grown. At least I thought so. We had made some considerable accomplishments. You know, we started bonding. He was calling in the whole nine yards, and we've been able to talk. And, he knows my story. One of the things I was very adamant about was making sure that I would tell my son my story. No one else would have to tell him. You know, I didn't want him to go and get bits and pieces of my story. I sat down and told him my story. Well, it was no longer than a month ago, maybe 3 weeks ago. We went down, we spent the day. I heard from my son maybe a week later. He was coming to Washington. He was catching a plane, and he wanted to drive my other car, which he typically drives when he's in the city. I give him a car. And I told him I couldn't do it this time because the car needed repairs. In particular, it needs brakes. And, you know, I'm not about to let him drive a car and it needs brakes. He has an accident, and it's going to cost me. So I didn't hear from my son. The moment I told him that this time I can't give you the car because it's not in my budget, son, I have to get the car fixed. And I haven't heard from my son from probably a week ago when I told him that up to this point. So he came to D.C., didn't contact me, and gone. I'm sure he's back in college. Now, I'm supposed to buy him a car this summer. So, integrity. And really, I kind of use that story really for really the ninth step, really more so than the eighth step, because one of the things I learned, I think integrity in the eighth step is simply realizing, because we know the principle is forgiveness in the eighth step, but I think it's really realizing when we do the list what my debt is. You know, and what's so beautiful about that, the moment I start complaining about your debt, then I need to go back and look at the eighth step. The moment I start complaining about what you did to me, then I need to pull out my eighth step, if I've done it thoroughly, and look at the debt that I owe on the list. And then maybe I could begin to let you go for your debt. You know, and then be prepared to deal with the list in the ninth. Beautiful thing about the integrity in the ninth step is really being there, as the ninth step talks about making the amends and being mindful of the injury, all of the experiences and the strength and the hope that I've heard on the ninth step by the predecessors in the program of Narcotics Anonymous have frequently talked about, are you prepared for it? Then when you go to make the amends, are you prepared for the reaction? And really what I'm talking about is having felt the rejection over and over again from someone that I hold to be very close to me. I talk about it. Let me say to you, thank God for the Narcotics Anonymous program, because I really do understand the dynamic. I understand that a lot of times I'm going to be hurt by people that are closest to me. But I know it's not really about them, that it's really about me in the way in which I've taught them how to treat me. And they really may not just be ready to let me off the hook. Or it could be just the way they deal with life. Because, you know, my son and I have had some beautiful moments. I really would like to report that I believe he has let me off the hook. But I know in my absence, his mother tried to give him everything that she could give him while I wasn't there. So maybe that spilled over to something called being spoiled. And guess what? That's just the way he is. That's how he deals. That's how he sees the process. And so, for an addict like me, what happens is now I have to go and ask the God of my understanding to be able to have the power to work the program to find a way to keep giving to my son, even though I may not get back what I expect in return. I've done it on a number of occasions. Now the program has asked me to do it one more time. What I just explained to you is the personal inventory that I have to take on a daily basis. To be able to have that kind of conversation with me. Taking that conversation and having it with my sponsor so I can hopefully make the right decision in the future. If not today, when I'm faced with the same situation, whether it's today or tomorrow and in the future, having really the ability to be able to step beyond my disease thinking and say one more time, maybe I'm going to be a little less selfish today, even though I'm tired of how you have rejected me, and try to do something different. What I really just talked to you about in this story also requires what the 11th step and the integrity that's involved there in terms of being able to connect to the God of my understanding and his perfect will for my life as it relates to the situations and circumstances of my life. Not just with my son, with my mother, with my brothers, really with my fellow man. Because the program also talks about being productive members of society. One of the things that has been very fortunate, you know, and my sponsor helps me with this a lot, and I'm very fortunate, is being able to look at life not half empty, but half full. You know, and because I just told you about a situation where, and, you know, I've been trying to kind of stay away from the place where I feel this rejection from my son. I tried to, this is the first time I really talked about it. Because we've been here before. I'm familiar with the pattern and the behavior before, but it still doesn't feel good. And I can kind of stay there. You get what I'm saying? If you kind of know how we can do as addicts, we can kind of stay on something. And what happens, I'll forget that the glass is half full. I'll forget about how the Creator has taken a life that was zero when I came in here and built it into something. Well, I have more responsibility today in my life than I ever had. And I'm able to meet it on a daily basis. When I talk about my fellow man or fellow woman being able to interact and being able to interact with others in society in a way of integrity by which I try to put principles first in all of my affairs. Now, this is what's beautiful. I come to understand that Narcotics Anonymous, that doesn't mean that I'm perfect. I love it. I really love the statement. It's in the 12th step. Because there's a principle embedded in the 10th step for when my failures show up, I have a way to deal with those too. And so, I'm a senior manager on my job, been a senior manager on my job for 5 years minimally. And mind you, the only senior male manager. It's a good thing. And having to be able to take this program from here and being able to practice the program there, as well as to practice the program with my son, with my family, with really, watch this, for an addict like me, even the person who I may meet walking down the street. Because an addict like me never had the capacity to give anything. Man, I thank God for my sponsor. With more than 20 years in the program, my sponsor begins to talk about this kind of service work that's really a little more than, it's inclusive. Because the little things are equally as important as the big things when we start talking about the spiritual process of integrity. But I'm talking about something that may go a little more than whether I'm going to give a newcomer a ride or not. But I'm talking about being able to visit folk in a hospital. A predecessor who has spent their time in Narcotics Anonymous and who can no longer participate in the way they used to participate in Narcotics Anonymous, and then you have a member of Narcotics Anonymous who has the ability in their process to be able to serve their needs. That's the kind of sponsor my predecessor who I follow. So now what I'm talking about is being able to hear those stories, being able to stay connected to that particular piece, and then watching my own life having the capacity to give something to somebody that I may run across walking down the street. Whether they're a member of Narcotics Anonymous or whether they're not. Whether they'll ever make it to Narcotics Anonymous or whether they won't. Not really being now so mindful about Narcotics Anonymous by name relative to the program. But I'm talking about now having more of a connection to the principles that are now guiding my life. The principles become the source that guides my life. Now also being able to deal with my disease. That means if I offended you, do I have enough principle and enough program in me to say I'm sorry that I offended you? Having enough program in my life, having enough work in my life to be able to go to a member of my staff and say, I was wrong about that. I like your idea better. How can we make it work? What I'm simply talking about is going from the seed, not having no idea how the plant was going to grow, of seeing the end result along the path. I don't need to talk about really the 12th step, because really the 12th step is really how we show up. And what I'm simply saying is, integrity is the program of Narcotics Anonymous. Integrity meets integrity inside of these rooms. Because the moment the newcomer says that I'm a mini in himself or herself, that I'm powerless, I cannot handle this, I need some help, that is an internal integrity process. Because we as addicts love denial. We love to escape responsibility. And what happens on the spiritual plane is by even admitting that, I've called out to the universe for some help. And so God has already set up the program of Narcotics Anonymous to meet the newcomer who's coming in the door with that small seed of integrity, simply saying that I need some help. That's my story. That's my process. I'm Tony, a gratefully recovering addict, and thank you very much.